Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is Rich Muni, Vice President of Player Development for the Poker Players Alliance. Well, we usually introduce our guests several minutes into the show. Tonight, we're going to get Rich involved immediately because two of the major news items of the week involve poker. So, Rich Muni is a former engineer and poker player, and someone who got involved in poker player rights shortly after the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act in 2006. He has a weekly radio show, which we'll talk about. His picture on the website is very flattering for a man with jaundice. Rich Muni, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, how are you all this evening? Great to be on the show. Bob and Richard.
Good. In the news this week...
All is good.
In the news this week, the two newest inductees to the Poker Hall of Fame are Tom McAvoy and Scotty Wynn. All the nominees were deserving, Rich Muni. Did the actual winners surprise you?
They didn't. I mean, you know, the inductees generally kind of run the gamut of the poker community. Scotty Wynn absolutely has his position. You know, we see him on TV all the time. He's certainly a personality, and then some. And of course, Tom, you know, came in from a unique path as well. So, you know, good luck to him. I'm kind of glad they don't just always go specifically by the rankings, and they're like, well, here are the top two money winners this year. They're in the, or you know, within the, you know, from 5 years on to now, therefore you're in. Yeah, they look at some different criteria. So they've got some interesting stuff going on over there.
I was actually surprised to see Scotty Wynn get in. His poker achievements are undeniable, but he had a highly publicized, loud, drunken, expletive-filled meltdown not too long ago. While he has apologized profusely and repeatedly, I didn't know if the voters were willing to forgive him or not. I guess they were.
The voters, Bob, are made up of both the press and the other members, or who exactly gets to vote?
As I understand it, it's all Hall of Fame members who are alive, and something like 18 different media members. I don't know which of those 18 it is. Rich Muni, are you one of those 18?
I'm not one of those 18.
All right.
Yeah, I think you may have had different results if, you know, more players were voting and less, you know, media. But who knows? It's always a hard thing. You know, in sports too, he can, you know, so he had a bad incident, you know, where he maybe did some bad things in public, but you know, in sports too, you have sports figures that act out that they still end up in the Hall of Fame,
and some never do. Some never are forgiven.
Right. Right.
But again, we're talking about Scotty Wynn. I mean, it's not exactly uncharacteristic. He's got his personality. So see, that's how his game, and you know, and kind of how he brought in. So, you know, I didn't have a vote. Would I have voted for him? No comment, because I don't have a vote, and also because, you know, the PPA doesn't just represent the pros. I mean, we represent everyone who plays. It's more about politics. For example, maybe a different advocacy organization for everyone wouldn't really be all that involved with the Hall of Fame. So, you know, the upper echelon or the professionals of where they happen to be. So it's not my biggest thing in terms of concerns, but you know, it's that's how he is, that's who he is, and there you go. You know, it makes for interesting TV, to say the least.
For sure. Now, in other big news this week, deals with another $1 million buy-in, big one for One Drop charity poker tournament, which will be held next summer during the World Series of Poker at the Rio in Las Vegas. It'll be slightly larger next year with up to 56 entries rather than last year's 48. Rich Muni, do you see this event as a good thing for poker?
I think the One Drop is a great thing for poker. I mean, it just shows the charity for a very worthwhile cause. I've seen him in action. I didn't participate. The buy-in was such that I calculated my bankroll requirement probably would have been in the trillions. But yeah, it just looked like a terrific event for, like I said, for the specific cause.
Munchkin, I assume you're not going to enter this year.
Well, they're limiting it to 56, so I don't think I'll be able to make the list. But I agree. I think it's really a good thing to see, you know, the general public seeing poker doing charitable work. You know, I think it's a good thing all around.
Well, I would think if you brought $1 million cash this week, there's plenty of room for you. I'm pretty sure. Anyway, Rich Muni, briefly, what is the Poker Players Alliance?
And you don't call me Rich. It sounds so formal with that Rich Muni. No, I don't call you guys Bob.
Well, my problem is...
We'll have a lot of fun. You guys sound like Richard.
Yeah, it's like Richard Munchkin and Rich Muni, there's a lot in common. I used to type in, when I send email, the M-U-N, and his name would automatically pop up. And now I type it in, and your name is there, too. And it's just... So someday you may get accidental emails somehow related to the show. But so be it. All right.
That'll be funny. I'm sure I'll actually enjoy reading them, just like I enjoy reading your column. But
thank you. So, what's the Poker Players Alliance?
I had a similarity too. I thought it was a little funny when I was looking at. It looked like mine's a shortened version of Richard Munchkin. So, yes. That's all good. But in terms of PPA, there's really a need for this in the, like you mentioned earlier, when you're with your kind introduction of what's going on with. Various lawmakers attacking, especially the online game, but it's not restricted to the online game. We're seeing a lot of problems with the home games being attacked by various law enforcement officials as well. And I'm not talking about the ones that are just pseudo gambling operations, but the actual ones that are home social games. So, you know, we have to organize this community and stick up for ourselves. So I just think it's been a terrific thing we've been doing. So let me tell you briefly about the actual organization. We have 1.2 million members now. Our chairman is former Senator Alphonse D'Amato, who's just been really terrific for us. You know, he had a hearing late last year, where he was before the Senate, and we're just supposed to be there, kind of like a third level participant, while they talked about tribal concerns or something like that. And he hit it out of the park. I mean, he really he's like the sleeper, coming in and taking over the show. But we lobby Congress, we organize the community, we represent things like where we are with Full Tilt Remissions. We're able to bring player concerns, to the claims administrator, Garden City Group, and we, effectively have people there every time this congressional hearing on this. We generally have one or two witnesses, which have included, again, our president, John Pappas. So just compared to where we were before we formed, when we're on just a clear downward slope of lawmakers just attacking us for sport, basically, to look good to their constituents, we've really successfully turned that around.
Now, presumably, you're always trying to get new members. Now, how much does it cost, and what does somebody receive if they join?
You know, we want new members. It's important, but I really want new activists. I don't. If someone sends us $15 and goes away, that's okay. At least they're showing their support, and it's important to show support. But what we really want are activists. People are going to send these letters to Congress. We've got them pre-written. I'll tell you a little later in the show some more details on that. But joining is super easy, and it's very important. Just go to theppa.org, and there's a join button right there. You can also go to joinppa.com, and it's just $15. Per year, and we have some really neat things. We have a PPA deck of cards. There's a really nice PPA T-shirt. It's in black with some really nice printing. And the terrific thing about that is, yeah, I mean, I've had a couple of these for a number of years, wear them to the gym, really work them hard, and they're super strong. So it's a nice little giveaway there. And we have a brand new one that I'd like to share with the listeners. It's the book Fundamentals of Poker by Mason Nalmuth. It's a really nice introductory book. So if it's too advanced for someone joining, they might wish to share it with a friend or family member and kind of help bring them up to speed on what it is exactly we do at the poker table. So you get a lot for the $15, but mostly what you get is representation, which we absolutely need. I mean, imagine if we were not represented right now. And I want to mention about the book. I think I said it, but just to clarify, it is the e-book. So you get electronically, and you put on all your devices. We're not trying to put a bunch of rights for digital rights management on it, so you can't copy the stuff. So you can, read it when you're on the plane or what have you. So it's a lot for the $15. And there's some other minor stuff that's a little more detailed for the program. But again, if you just go to theppa.org/join, you can have a look at the full benefit package. It's a really good value for $15. We like to call it the best bet in poker.
Now, Nevada and Delaware currently have online poker. New Jersey is about to launch. Which states do you see coming online next?
You know, with these three states coming on, it's just terrific. Nevada, of course, has been at this for a few months. Their second site came online just a few weeks ago. Now, Delaware is going to go live on Halloween, which is pretty neat. And then just a couple weeks later, that'll be followed by New Jersey. They have five sites licensed already, and they'll have a few more ready to go on launch day. So it's just terrific. Now, what this is really going to do is, as other states just see that it's happening and spreading, we see them wanting to come first. So that's really going to kind of help that, like some dominoes are falling, and it's really important here. New York, just looking very promising. Pennsylvania, we've been spending a lot of time with, really focused on the state of Pennsylvania and California. They've already finished debating if they should have this, like the moral debate is long over. Now it's just how they want to do it, and everyone's just arguing about how to divvy up the pie. The tribal interests already have a gaming compact. They're very concerned about where they come in on this. The current card rooms, of course, want a piece of it. So various factions have been kind of moving back and forth, forming different coalitions, and they haven't come together. But we expect this to happen sooner than later. So, you already have three right there. And then in the next tier, Illinois, Massachusetts, some of these states are looking very strong. And it's my guess it'll kind of be like a lottery, once a few more of these come in, then you really start seeing them coming on. And if you live in Nevada or New Jersey, you shouldn't just think, well, I have mine, I'm all done, and just forget about it. Because especially in Nevada, there isn't a lot of liquidity, so it's hard to get up a lot of different games at various hours, or if you want a high-stakes game of game that's kind of not in the top tier of popularity, you need more players available. So if you're in Nevada, what you're not done, because you want other states to partner with Nevada and have interstate compacts with them, and you'd also like the federal government to pass legislation authorizing all of this, because that would speed up the process as well. So everybody has a big role to play until the whole country is moved forward on the online.
What's your feeling about that, Rich? I mean, because really, as you mentioned, the liquidity is not there in Nevada. So, but if they could partner with another state that, say California passes their law and allows it in California, could Nevada and California get together and say, because it's legal in both places, we want to pool our games? Can they do that?
They can. There is no limit at the federal level to doing that. In fact, there was some concern over whether the Wire Act prohibited such a thing, and the Department of Justice ruled in late 2011 that no, the Wire Act applies to sports betting only. So now they absolutely can do that. Now, I don't think Nevada and California will be a logical pair at this point. I'm pretty sure California will wish to go it alone for the foreseeable future, but they do have liquidity. But other states absolutely fit that description. reins of the Nevada Gaming Commission. For example, a state like Iowa, who does have casinos, they do have a competent gaming commission, but they don't have experience with the online game yet. They might say, you know, we outsource this, but we reserve the right as a gaming commission to have a close watch on this. But then, you know, we get that liquidity between the two states. And I think there'll be several states coming on board to do it that way. I think New Jersey is very logical in terms of getting the Northeast to partner up into interstate compacts in there. I don't know if they'll come into the two poles, the Nevada pole and the New Jersey pole of linked states, but I do think that's a logical way to go forward. And that's what we see with horse racing now. Poker is, you know, even more, you know, another pari-mutuel. Poker's in a similar but even more extreme circumstance because we need people to play against. You can have an online sports betting site and just have a handful of players. As an operator, if you want to spread your risk out a little bit, you could do that elsewhere. With poker, I mean, you have to have opponents. So we're in a little bit of a unique situation. It's another good reason to be organized, because if we weren't, some of these states might just shrug their shoulders, just forget about it, just let this go move forward, just only off of just games of chance only, and be done with it. Since we're the driving force, we're able to have a little more weight in this conversation. We need to have a seat at that table.
So I live in California right now, Rich. What's your best guess as to when California will be coming online?
Last year, I would have guessed the following year, this year. 2 years ago, I would have guessed last year. You know, it's so close. You know, you keep thinking it's the next year, and this year I am going to my prediction is still next year. Things are looking closer now, and I think, you know, with these other three states actually moving forward, because last year, none of them had moved forward by then. Nevada was ready to go. But you know, it's a very different discussion next year, and I think you'll see, I really think California will be a little bit more prodded to move forward, combined with the fact that their fiscal situation has been you know, remarkably bad the last few years, and will certainly, it's not going to be any better next year. They're going to continue looking for revenue sources, which is why there really isn't much of a contingent of people saying this, we just should let this one by. I mean, that discussion really isn't even happening anymore in California. I think, you know, I live in Kentucky. I think you have better odds than I do for next year by far.
Yeah, our problem seems to be that the card rooms and the Indians are all arguing about how to carve up the money.
That's right. And the tribes there are some tribes aligned with the card rooms, and there are some tribes aligned, you know, with in separate coalitions. It's kind of a unique situation for California. Most states are just looking at this as a good idea or not. And you're like the one state that's really gone forward. Unlike the states that actually already did go forward, it didn't have these kind of issues. Your state's like the one that's going for it already and already going in principle with the idea, and now they have to end up figuring out how to do it. It's another reason for you and other folks in California to really keep pressure on the lawmakers to just make sure it happens and they understand the voters want them to make some choices and get it done.
All right, changing gears a little bit. Full Tilt Poker. They're getting around to paying off American players. If some of our listeners have not filed yet for their money on Full Tilt, what should they do?
I'm glad you mentioned this, and I know when we talked in person, I specifically mentioned this was so important to mention because the deadline is fast approaching. We have until the middle of November. You have to file, you have to be on there, have it filed by November 16th. Now, they've been doing a good job of notifying people that claims administrator has. So let me give just a little bit of background, if I may, to the listeners.
Please do.
Full Tilt went away in the aftermath of Black Friday. The Department of Justice accused them of running a quasi-Ponzi scheme, whereas they didn't set it up to be that, but it became that because they're using player money to finance their operations. PokerStars purchased them, and part of the deal was that they would give money to the DOJ, and the DOJ would remit the money to the players as using the process they would use to give money back to fraud victims. So it's a little bit of a unique situation. The situation with to how the money's coming back to us is that a group called Garden City Group was awarded the contract by the Department of Justice. Now, so we can just go to this their website. It's called FullTiltPokerClaims.com. And once we go there, you can apply right from there. Now, they've done a fine job of emailing people. Now, if you've gotten an email from them, it contains two numbers, a control number and a claims number and a petition number. I mean, so if you take these two numbers, you go on their site, just log in, they'll tell you your total, and if you agree with them, just kind of click yes, and you're basically done. Just, you know, verifying your address and give them the bank information thing and send you your money. But they're not requesting any supporting documentation. So it's so much more streamlined than past processes have been. So in that regard, it's really good. I mean, we were expecting a lengthy process where they're actually expecting you to, like, you know, prove your balance the way you'd have to prove it in any other fraud case. But they have the information, and they've been really good about it. But
that's
like I said,
that's great. November that's FullTiltClaims.com?
FullTiltPokerClaims.com. Now, the deadline is November 16th, so have that application in. If you have the email, send it. If you don't, you can still apply from the website. Everybody can apply. Even if you've been told somehow you're disqualified, you can still apply. So everybody should do that. It's fairly straightforward to apply. You'll still have to give them a little information to document your claim. But they have streamlined that even for people who have not been kind of past the pre-vetting.
That's great. Now, that's great. I wish they had something like that for Ultimate Bet.
You know, they would if we had the money. The problem with Ultimate Ultimate Bet has been, you know, they closed it down the exact same way. The frauds were probably relatively similar. They had fraudulent activities in the past with the super user scandal that 11 Grover has covered so well. But now there's a situation there where they didn't recover any funds or they didn't recover much, if any. And it's a shame because they could do the same thing, but they're not going to use taxpayer money to pay back people who chose to take the risk of playing on Ultimate Bet.
Sure.
It's just the same thing. They're not doing Full Tilt. What they're doing is they're taking that money to be recovered from the purchase of Full Tilt's assets from PokerStars, and they're sending that money to U.S. players. It would be terrific, and we have made the case to the DOJ that if there's anything they can do with Ultimate Bet, if they can arrest some people or whatever, you know, try to recover some funds from some of those thieves within the U.S., and try to remit some of that, but it's a very it's a difficult thing, and that's the whole problem with this all being located offshore, and we don't have access to, you know, U.S. law enforcement. If you have if you cheated, or if a site cheats you, you don't have any recourse. One thing we like about licensing and regulating is that if I feel like I got cheated by a player or by a site, I have recourse beyond that site. I can go to a regulator, I can go to law enforcement, I can sue somebody. And I have recourse. Even libertarians believe, which I consider myself to be one of them, is that you have to have like access to courts to be able to, and you have to have ability to enforce contracts. So that's a great reason to go forward. But in terms of where we are now, I think it's great that the Full Tilt victims can get remission. I hope Ultimate Poker and Absolute Bet people. I'm sorry, I've reversed that. Which is a terrible thing for Ultimate Poker. Apologies to my friends at Ultimate Poker, but Ultimate Bet and Absolute Poker, that they could get a similar sort of thing if those funds were available. PPA is absolutely 100% behind such a thing. Yeah, if such a thing were available.
Does PPA have a position on Bodog and Bovada have come out with this system where all the players are anonymous so that the poker tracking software that keeps all the data on all the players can't be used. And their position is that this is better for the recreational player because it just gives the players using the tracking software too big an edge over the recreational players. Does the PPA have a position on those, like poker table ratings and those kind of tracking databases?
Well, you know, we haven't formalized a position, but I have a strong opinion on it, and I have vocalized it. I'm authorized to speak on behalf of the organization, so somebody might pick up some things, of course, on 2+2 and say they are, and I don't think anyone should dispute that at all. my opinion on Poker Tracker is that it is detrimental to the game. Any kind of outside gathering service, I think is very harmful to the game. I don't think the solution is anonymous play at all. I think it's problematic. It makes it harder for the player to track down if there's a super user. You couldn't have that. You'd struggle if you had the opening problems we had with Ultimate Bet to be able to identify the way the users on 2+2 were able to gather up the available data, show the unlikelihood, and then eventually be able to get some people from Ultimate Bet to surreptitiously flow some data out that would prove it conclusively. So I think it's problematic for that. It also turns it into a less of a game of skill because you don't know who you're playing. You try to evaluate them in the short term. So I can pretty much condemn the way some of these data gathering sites have operating in the past, especially the ones that were selling hand histories and just gathering up millions and millions of hands on every player. So I think the solution is probably worse than the problem.
Because how would you stop them? How would you prevent that?
I think it's problematic. I don't know if you can just copyright, like if the site can just copyright the play. What these services tend to state is that they're just kind of like reporting on what they saw. And if they witnessed it, you can't really copyright what somebody saw. You can copyright the data package, but not what somebody actually saw. So I think it would be tricky. I don't know if you can, as part of legislation, try to outlaw it, but then you have some offshore sites trying to offer the services. And one way to do it is you just stop outsiders from watching the games. Like, if you're not in the game, you just can't view it. I think that's the one really straightforward way to address the situation.
Poker Table Ratings?
Poker Table Ratings. That's the problematic one. Now, Poker Tracker, I think that's a great service because, it just allows you to store what you've seen. And I see that as a useful tool for a player just to be able to evaluate how he plays or she plays and be able to keep good tax records and win-loss records and these types of things. So I think the difference to me is what I observed was a part of as a player versus what was gathered up as a as a non-player.
Sure, that makes sense.
One thing I recall, I want to give a full answer here, because one thing I recall was it used to be where it was easy for anybody just to track the full tilt play. If you're an observer, you could actually just naturally get table table histories as an observer. And then they cut that off. I do think that's one wise thing to do. Now, in terms of these automated systems that just use screen scraping to gather up the data, I think a combination of law enforcement plus some methods from the sites to make that a more complicated thing to do would certainly be called for. But I don't think anonymous play is the appropriate solution to this problem.
We mentioned Ultimate Bet a few times in the last 5 minutes. There's a new documentary out called Ultimate Beat, which covers the cheating scandal surrounding Ultimate Bet online poker. Now, the director of that documentary, Scott Bell, will be our guest on this show next week. Munchkin and I received review copies of the film to look at prior to the show in order to prepare questions. Although we'll have a lot to say about it next week, briefly, Munchkin, did you like the film?
I did, but I found it confusing. And I've the director is still making some changes, and I've talked to him about what I thought was confusing. But in general, I liked it. Yeah.
Rich Muni, did you get a chance to see the film?
I've dealt with Scott Bell a lot. He posts on the forum as 11 Grover, as I had mentioned a bit ago, and I know Mason Nalmi's had a good chance to talk to him specifically about the issues because 2+2 had so much to do with the unraveling of that. And I am a forum moderator at 2+2 mentioned, I'm a moderator on News Views and Gossip, on poker legislation, and what we call the Zoo, which is just the Internet Poker Forum. But, you know, just specifically in terms of this movie, he sent me the review copy last night, which is really awesome, of Eleven Grove, and I really appreciate it. I guess I'd call Scott Bell for the program. And I look forward to hearing him last week. I didn't get a chance to finish watching it, but I can virtually vouch for it, just you know, based on my interactions. I know he's the, you know, if he doesn't know it, it didn't happen, basically. And I definitely look forward to seeing, you know, the final cut that's ready to go. So, yeah, I mean, everyone should really mark their calendars for when that movie is, you know, out and available in its final form. And it's really not, it's one you won't want to miss. I mean, if you're thinking to yourself, you know, the good old days were fun, government, because people, you know, before Black Friday, and for your listeners, that's the day the DOJ shut down the major U.S.-facing poker sites. There were people who argue with me trying when I was trying to, you know, lead some of the efforts toward licensing of the game. They said, oh, what would you want to do that for? This is just terrific. They'll just access and all this sort of stuff. And you're supposed to pay your taxes anyway. And if anyone thinks they can just send all this money back and forth abroad and the IRS would never know about it, it's fairly foolish in my opinion. And I always take mine for that exact reason and because it's the right thing to do. But, you know, we heard this a lot from various people. And some of these same people are caught up when the sites have gone to with their money. And then they just noticed they didn't have, you know, the legal recourses they would have had they had, you know, a licensed and regulated game. So anyone who kind of questions where we should be on this, I think should really, you know, take a good look at this documentary and really understand where we are as a community and needs we have. Because we're kind of playing blind. And PokerStars has been super honorable, but doesn't mean we can just depend on sites to have that fundamental soundness behind them. I think we just need an ability to have some recourse when it doesn't happen. So yeah, be sure to check out the movie and be sure to follow whatever Eleven Grover has to say when Scott Bell posts under that user handle on the 2+2 forums.
Now, we talked about Full Tilt a few minutes ago. So now the November 16th due date's happening in 3 weeks. But apparently there's a significant number of players who have money in Full Tilt that they could ask for and redeem, but so far they're not coming forward to claim the money. Now, do you have any theories as to why this is happening?
You know, I do. I think the major grouping are just people who just have less than $5. I mean, they're just playing the 1 cent, 2 cent limit games, and they're just not going to bother. They're just not worth the trouble. I think there's, and that's probably, I mean, it's rightfully so. I mean, I think it makes sense maybe to participate in the process that we're all doing, but I think they understand, you know, all that money to process it does come right out of the player funds. I mean, the government isn't using taxpayer money to, you know, help poker players out. I mean, I know there's some players out there who just seem surprised to hear that government agents aren't waking up every morning worried about, you know, money poker players use to play on offshore sites, but they're not. But they do understand it's a fraud case, and I think they're doing a very professional job of getting it back. But I do think a lot of them are that. I think there's some, obviously, much smaller population. I mean, we were talking about the site saying millions, and they're not millions of affiliates, but there's some people who have been branded as affiliates who were merely either on part of the official Full Tilt Rakeback program, or they did have an affiliate relationship, but it's a very small percentage of their total bankroll. They were being denied at first. PPA went back to the DOJ and to Garden City Group, the claims administrator, and explained, you know, that these are not affiliates in the traditional sense of, you know, of an equal company or something like that. But, you know, these are just players who had little side deals. And DOJ came back and said, these players can apply. And Garden City Group came back as well. And they clarified this. And they said players who had these contracts, they could still apply for their funds minus their affiliate revenue, and that'll be calculated by Garden City Group. So it's not like everybody's expected to go out and try to figure this out. And then, yeah, and they're being notified that they can go ahead and apply. I think that represents some portion of them as well. Some people have just been deemed ineligible. I encourage encourage all those people to still, you know, still to apply. But I imagine some people just have chosen not to, unfortunately, because there's still going to be a final review. Some of those are like the Red Pros, and I don't mean the owners, I don't mean the Howard Letterers, but I mean some of the people who just had a, they had an hourly deal, maybe they got $35 an hour and they had a rake back deal, but they're really playing and are playing, you know, then they're making a living at the table. So they just have sponsorship deal, just like a golfer or any other sponsored professional of, you know, of any other activity. Some of them have been told just outright they're not going to be eligible. They're kind of deemed quasi-employees. But these people should still apply, and they may need to have a lawyer come in later on. But I think there's some of those people as well, obviously. That would be a minuscule percentage of the numbers that have been reported by Garden City Group. And then finally, I think some people are just waiting till the end. Either they're procrastinating, they're seeking out some legal recourse, maybe they had some bounced checks right at the end as Black Friday was approaching and beyond. There have been a few people who, you know, some of the deposits didn't register, or their final checks bounced, or their, you know, they had some other irregularities that happened right around as a result of Black Friday. Some of these people are waiting as well. But in terms of the notification, Garden City Group is out trying to find everyone. They're emailing them at their last known email address, and now they're sending postcards out. So a lot of people will be getting these postcards telling them how to get their money to the last known address. And then finally, I am concerned that there are people who just don't know who do have decent amounts of money. I mean, I had a letter last week from someone saying, when am I going to get my PokerStars money back? And I said, PokerStars, and they gave the money back a week after Black Friday. Go ahead and contact them and get your money. And they were quite shocked to hear that. So that's why I'm glad to be on your program this evening and kind of help put this word out. Now, PPA has been putting this word out to all of our members. We email them about one, you know, with our weekly updates. We've really included this. You know, this information has been in pretty much all of them. Just a reminder, reminder. And I hope that's helped at least our membership get theirs. Of course, 2+2 and Pocket Fives, we bring out a lot of information on those sites as well.
You know, while we're kind of on this topic, we don't take call-ins from listeners because we don't have a screener, but occasionally we do take email questions, and I actually just received an email from someone listening to the show who wanted me to ask you about if you know anything about eWallet Express. eWallet Express was a company similar to NetTeller that was a company that, you know, facilitated money going back and forth between the players and the casinos, and they were shut down the way NetTeller was, and those players have never received their money back. Do you know anything about what happened with them?
You know, I do, and it was a shame. It was another sort of a situation where you have one of these offshore sites that shut down. They keep promising they're going to send it back, and they didn't. I actually have a really terrific supporter who's just always on my Facebook page, like every single day, sending out the letters. We send out pre-filled tweets all the time to various lawmakers, just kind of keep the drumbeat in the background so they know we're organized. And he had the same issue, and I reached out. You know, we did it on my program that we'll, I think we're going to mention the existence of that a little bit later, but probably not a ton of detail. But we were talking about this with one of our attorneys from PPA, who's on the board of directors. He leads up our litigation support network. He's just a terrific guy named Patrick Fleming. And unfortunately, it's another one of these situations where, you know, it's very limited what you can do, and that's part and parcel of the whole idea that it's all offshore. So that's been very painful to us as a player community. Now, I have around five figures locked up myself on Full Tilt, so I understand that exactly, and also went through the whole NetTeller thing. So this has just been, you know, painful all around for everyone, and I just can't wait till we resolve, you know, what caused this problem by having accountability in the games that we're playing in the future. But eWallet Express, unfortunately, falls into that terrible category.
You have a radio program on Monday nights. What's it all about?
Oh, it's fun. It's not. Unfortunately, I'm not on the airwaves like you all are, which is just terrific, and congratulations on the success of this program. But we're on. I'm on On Tilt Radio, which is a terrific website. They put out a lot of they put a regular schedule of poker webcasts, and I'm pleased to say we're the number one program, not because it's a feather in my cap, but it just shows that the community really does care about the advocacy issue and really discussing the intricacies of it on a weekly basis. We're about to enter our third season. We have a live show, and it airs weekly Monday night at 8 o'clock, and the website is just ontiltradio.com. I have a page there, which is at ontiltradio.com/CPA, and we have a daily action plan that I was alluding to a bit ago, and that appears on that page and on an action page I have as well. And we talk about that. We always have pretty good guests, really good guests. Had poker author Mason Malamuth, who owns 2 Plus 2. He's been on the program a few times, just a terrific guest. We've had we had Gary Johnson, who's a Libertarian candidate for president in 2012. He's been on the program twice, and the vice presidential candidate was on the program election eve, which was really neat to have him on. Being live, it's always fun. Now, I don't really go scripted. I just have some show notes, so we always have a really good discussion, and it just really follows the flow. So it's you never know what to expect. So I encourage everyone to tune in. Now, if you don't catch it live, the podcast is available on iTunes. So yeah, just everyone can just go to iTunes and look up Poker Advocacy with Rich Muni, and just subscribe to it. It'll just automatically be on your iPhone, or, you know, your iDevice, your iOS device, and good on the subway or whatever. If you don't have a good internet connection, you have it there. Or if you're on the plane and you need to tune out all that background noise, you can check out the program. But we have a lot of fun with it. I encourage everyone to check it out and just kind of follow what's going on. I always think we have a really interesting guest. Everyone seems to enjoy the program.
Thank you. Rich, we're going to do some commercials, and then afterward, Munchkin and I are going to be talking about some emails we keep getting, and we're going to ask your opinion about something. So will you be able to stay awake? Stay awake. Will you be able to hang on for a few minutes?
Absolutely. I'll stick with the program.
Perfect.
Thanks. Thank you.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. In October, you play for buffets. Play 300 points prior to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday and earn a free lunch buffet. Play a total of 600 points prior to 8 p.m. and earn a free dinner buffet, whether you've earned a lunch buffet the same day or not. They usually have double points on holidays at South Point, but they're not going to be doing it on Halloween. I've talked to the slot club head twice, and it's official. They're not going to have it, so this is disappointing to a lot of us. But that's the way it is. The free video poker class this coming Tuesday is 9-7 triple double bonus. This is a heaven or hell game where you get paid the same as a royal flush if you get four aces along with a 2, 3, or 4. And you pay for all this higher four of a kind stuff by only receiving 2-for-1 for three of a kinds rather than the more normal 3-for-1s. The top three pay schedules all pay 9-for-1 for the full house, but they vary for the amount you receive for the flush. The best pay schedule is 7-for-1 for the flush, and that's one we're going to be teaching. But the strategy for the 7-for-1 version is a lot different than the 6-for-1 version or the 5-for-1 version. The higher amount you get for the flush causes you to make a lot of adjustments to your strategy. At the Palms, this is the last week of their $100,000 monster truck giveaways. 10 winners tomorrow night and Saturday night will each receive between $250 and $1,500. And they each will receive an entry into a truck drawing, which is going to be held this Saturday after the regular drawing. One of the 40 people or 40 winners will get the truck, which is $30,000 in credit at Finley Chevrolet, or $24,000 in cash or free play. I currently have 2 entries out of the 40. I'm hoping to get a third and or a fourth. this Friday and Saturday night, but as of now, I have no idea. But even if that wish comes true, I still only have a 1 in 10 chance of getting the new car. Beginning at 8 p.m. Saturday, you can earn entries for the November promotion. The details appear to be that there's 10 winners Friday and Saturday night, and they each receive $500, and then every week after the Saturday night drawings, one of those 20 people from that weekend's winners will walk away with $20,000. This makes each entry having an EV of $1,500, although 19 out of the 20 people will only get $500. For the PEW Play, Earn, and Win for the second half of the month through tomorrow, they have a theme of genuine articles. We've talked about this several times, but beginning Monday, the new PEW gifts will include a Kindle Paperwhite, a down comforter, and bread sheets. As always, you keep your points. Unredeemed points earned Monday may be spent on Wednesday or Friday. Unredeemed points earned Wednesday may be spent on Friday. If you don't spend them by Friday at midnight, they evaporate. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, you may earn Albertsons or Costco gift cards at a rate of 40,000 points per $100 worth of gift cards, which is 0.25%. Unlike the PEW gifts, unredeemed points from Tuesday do not carry over until Thursday. Assuming you consider these gift cards as good as cash, this means double points 2 days a week, up to $82,000 coin in for the day. At videopoker.com, the monthly contest beginning today is 100 Play Video Poker with Super Times Pay. Super Times Pay is a 6-coin per line game where approximately every 15 hands you receive a multiplier between 2x and 10x. This increases the return of the game by about 0.25%, requires no changes in the strategy. To have the best chance in the tournament, you want to pick the game with the highest variance. Of the games offered, the highest variance is the Atlantic City version of Joker Poker. It's only a 97% game, approximately, but because of the high variance, that's the best game to play in this event. The second best game is Double Double Bonus. VideoPoker.com also gives away a free gold membership to everyone who attends one or more of my classes this semester at the South Point. All right. We get a lot of emails, and we answer them. And sometimes we address something, but we keep getting emails on it. Now, Richard Munchkin, we've addressed someone trying to decide whether they should turn pro several times previously on the show, but we keep getting questions about it. You had a recent correspondence about this. What was that all about?
I did. And, you know, everyone's circumstances are different. You know, in the past, I've gotten letters from people who are, you know, college students. Should I finish college? Should I, you know, I want to turn pro. In this case, it was a guy in his 40s who has a good job, health insurance, but he's winning money, you know. And, you know, really at that point, it's really more of a lifestyle question than a gambling question. You know, it depends on if he's married and do you have kids and are you paying for college and, you know, giving up health insurance at 46, you know, is not insignificant.
Hopefully he pays for it. He doesn't give it up, but he's giving up free health insurance. It's different than giving up health insurance. He should still have it.
Yeah. He'll have to pay for it. Yeah, absolutely. And it's not like I think a lot of people either turn pro when they're in their 20s and they have nothing to lose, and if they go broke, well, go get a job, you know, or people who are retired from their regular job and now they can afford to turn pro and you know, they have a lot of free time on their hands. That's a different story, especially if they're 65 and can hit Medicare. So, you know, I unfortunately, there is no easy answer. A lot of it has to do with, are you miserable in your job? If you are, I would say quit. You know, as my friend Max likes to say, jobs are overrated.
Max has a lot of clever things to say.
Yeah. So
now, I was actually approached on this similar subject a few weeks ago in my classes at the South Point. A man who'd taken several classes over the years, and we'd become friends, he came up and wanted to hire me to help him turn pro. He was maybe 40 years old and has a bankroll of 20, 30,000, something like that. I told him that hiring me would not be a good use of his money. For a bankroll of $20,000, I don't know of games in Vegas where you can regularly earn more than $10 or $15 an hour for the very best players who are willing to grind it out. Now, and some of those games require you be at least 50 years old to take advantage of senior promotions. Is that enough to live on? Of course, if that's the lifestyle you want. But it's probably not enough to justify paying somebody $200 an hour for coaching. Now, if somebody had a $500,000 or larger bankroll, then yes, I could help them a lot. That opens up a lot of additional games to play, and it's still possible to earn decent money playing video poker. But it's very likely it's going to be losing years along the way, even for the best players. It's much more difficult to do this today than it was a few years ago, and a lot of people are trying to do it. Some are succeeding, some are not. Coaching in this situation makes a lot of sense. Now, Rich Muni, what do you say to folks who ask you about turning pro?
You know, I mean, poker is kind of weird. It's a different game, but it's still the same. I assume it's going to be a very similar determination because you still have the same bankroll requirements. You're still looking at variance. You still have a risk of ruining. You're still using the same formulas, even though ours is a game of skill.
So are ours.
You know, it's a legal distinction. Video poker, you have to be very skilled. The skill is going from, you know, losing a couple of percent to not making errors. The skill in finding the where the promotions actually make it positive and making the speed to accurate, things like that. And that's what I'm saying. It's a very similar calculation. Now the because there are people who just assume it's different. They think, oh, I'm playing poker, it's a game of skill. If I'm skillful, I'm going to win. No, it's evil in the long run, but you still have all these same considerations. And the situation you're describing here is very interesting. I kind of have to agree with the discussion so far. It matters is it a high-paying job? Does he like his job? Is it $20,000 the way I would describe a bankroll, money that you don't mind losing, or is it like everything you have? I've had people tell me their bankroll is $300,000, but they cry if they lose $2,500 in a night. Well, I tell them, your bankroll is not $300,000. Your bankroll is what you can kind of lose over the long run. And if $2,500 is a problem, then we're not talking about the bankroll you seem to think you have. A lot goes into it. It's also the availability of these games in the long run. If somebody thinks they're going to learn one specific thing as opposed to learning the whole theory of how you're going to make a living at this, I would say no. If someone's very adaptable and they understand 3 years from now they're going to be doing something probably relatively different than what they're doing today. For example, if they thought, you know, my plan is to be a Casino X, be there some number of hours in a day, take advantage of this current promotion.
Thank you, Rich Muni. We appreciate Richard Munchkin. Good night. Hit lots of royal flushes, everybody.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.